I would like to introduce Paula, who has come from Freehold tonight to speak with us and share her experience, strength, and hope. Thank you so much, Paula.
You're welcome. So once again, I'm Paula. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Paula.
I'm also a sugar addict. And so just a little bit about my numbers and my stats. So I came into the program 10 years ago, January. So it was January 06. I did not get abstinent until April of 2008. And so I've been abstinent since April 20th, 2008. I'm maintaining about a 50-pound weight loss now. I have weighed a little less than I do now, about 10 pounds. I got as high as almost 200 pounds. And this is the weight that I always describe as God-given, because it's just simply a miracle that I could still wear the same size pants for the last 8 years. So those are my dates and my numbers. So I have memories of sneaking food. I think I was climbing a kitchen counter, and I have these visions of like opening a cabinet, you know, and making sure that it wouldn't squeak. And I must have been somewhere before the age of 5. And so I don't remember the details other than the fact that I was sneaking. I was trying to do this so that nobody could see me doing it. So this relationship with food started early on, but it really propelled itself into another point of, frankly, it was the only solution that I had, was when, and most of you know because we're all, we've been in the rooms and stuff, that I was abused as a child by my mother's father around the ages of 8 and 12 is what I had uncovered through a lot of therapy and actually being hypnotized, believe it or not. I've done a lot of work in it, and that was what was revealed. So and so the eating started, it went full force, like the compulsion went full force at that point. And the truth of the matter is that I always say this because I think it's really important. I always tell people about the abuse because it's part of my story. And the other amazing thing is I always have at least one person come up to me afterwards and tell me that it happened to them too. And so I just want them to know that they're not alone. But the food saved me because I had a problem, and it was the only solution that I had to this problem. And the food served itself, and it had its purpose. And its purpose was during a very horrible, traumatic time, it really helped me to cope with my situation. And frankly, it saved my life. And so that is something that I'm very thankful for. But, you know, as a 45-year-old woman and, you know, 35 when I came into the rooms, it no longer served its purpose, really. You know, it made my life completely and utterly miserable. And so I always say that because, you know, I had this problem and I only had one solution. You know, that was all I knew was to eat, you know, and that's what I've known since I was 8, maybe even earlier, based on those memories that I had. So that was what I did. And my eating behaviors ranged from my big thing was eating alone. And I think that had a lot to do with control and just kind of, I wasn't a public eater. You would never see me binging or overeating in front of other people because in my sick mind, I thought, they're going to think something's wrong with me if they see me eat the way that I usually do. Because frankly, the way that I used to eat, and I still have a problem with this, is, you know, I eat very fast. I'm always the first one done with my meals to this day. And I try, and it's just, there's some things that I have to see. It's a constantly working on things. But apart from all of that, I just remember this shoving, like it was just, and I'd be in another place in a, you know, oblivion. And so never did it in public. And so it was a big nighttime eater, at whatever stage in my life I was. I just wanted everybody to go away, so that I could eat. And it took a lot of the edge off. And, you know, the thing is that, and this is the way that I heard someone say this, and I'm like, that's exactly how, you know, so the cravings, most normal eaters, they crave something, they eat it, it's satisfying. They're satisfied. You know, it's like, I just had this wonderful piece of something. I took a few bites. I feel so good. It tastes good. And they move on. But my cravings are just intensified. It's not like they're ever satisfied, you know, and I never felt that feeling of satisfaction. I don't know in relation to food if I ever felt that way. I overshot the mark all the time. You know, I had no understanding of what it was like to just eat something. And I see this, even to this day, I watch my mother, my children, my husband, all very normal eaters, and just kind of leave things on their plate. I always find that so, to this day, I've been abstinent 8 years, left stuff on their plate. Like, I just can't, it's just something that I can't, and, you know, people nibble. Have you ever seen people nibble on the round things that are, you know, in the box and the sleeves? And I don't do that. I just didn't know how to stop. I had no power. I had no control. I had no choice in the matter. Like, I put one of those things in, this intensification would happen. I heard someone say that. I'm like, that's exactly how I felt. And I would just keep going. And it would have to be usually pain, that pain that you feel when you're so full, you know. And usually I think that would kind of stop it, or unless that, or there was no food left, you know. And so that was my relationship with food, you know. It was just very, it was distorted. I didn't use it to nourish myself. It was just always to take the pain away. There was this feeling of control that I lacked as a child that I got from the food, all of these things. And so I ate at night. I was, when I had children, like, so when I had the kids, like, that phase of it, like, you know, toddlers, it dropped to the floor, I'd pick it up, I'd put it in my mouth, you know, they would leave food on their plates, like normal people, and I wouldn't, it would never hit the garbage, it would go in my mouth, like, there was no beginning, middle, or end, I had no, there was no dignity, I had no self-respect, it was just, I would do whatever, you know, it was almost like there was no in between the action of just, you know, grabbing it and putting it in, and it meant everything. My meals, I grazed all day. That was another thing, you know. The big hits were at night. Like, and what I mean by, like, consuming large amounts of food happened typically at night. And that was it. And more importantly, I have to say, and I don't remember this as often, but all the food behaviors, I'm sure you can relate to, but really it was just what really pains me the most about my life before this program was the compulsion, like the constant thinking about the, it was all consuming. I thought about food from the moment that I woke up to the time I went to bed. And it was just always this distraction maybe from reality, you know, but it was just constant. And that is the piece that I'm almost sometimes saddened by, that I spent a lot of time like that. But that was just part of my life, right, and my story. And so I try to look at it in phases of my life. And then a big thing happened when I got to college. So the abuse that I described, I really didn't realize I had suffered any kind of abuse until I was 18 years old. And the doctors told me that sometimes the mind will protect itself from traumatic experiences. And then at some point, at some time, maybe, maybe never, it opens up and then, you know, the floodgates open. And for me, that happened. And it happened literally the first week in college. So I grew up in Eatontown, New Jersey. The abuse happened in Eatontown, New Jersey. I get out. I go to school in New York City. I'm there. We all, I don't know if anyone could relate to that first week in college. It's frightening. You're around a lot of new people. I'm in a dormitory with two other girls. I'm happy to get out. There was a part of me that wanted to get out, and that's part of the miracles that I was going to talk about. But immediately, I started having these horrible, horrible dreams that were very vivid. They were not just any kind of dream. It was the kind of thing that something horrible had happened to me. And for a long time, I couldn't describe necessarily the food piece. I just thought, see, the truth of the matter is I just blame myself for everything. You know, it wasn't like I made excuses. My mother didn't feed me right, or, you know, this is happening because I'm having a bad day. Like, this was all like just self-inflicted. And it was all my fault that I ate this way. It's all my fault that I looked the way that I did. And I put all the blame on me. And so nobody else, and I have two brothers and a sister, nobody else has any kind of compulsion. They're all normal eaters. My mother's a normal eater. And so why, you know, my mother used to look at me and be like, why is she so fat? And everybody else is so, you know, it was just always this thing. And so I couldn't even explain what was, why this was happening to me, why I had these behaviors. So it came out that first week and I had these dreams and I thought, oh my God, something horrible happened to me. Well, the truth is that I gained weight so quickly in that first year. And I described this in my home meeting, like people have the freshman 15, you know, I went from 150 to like 190 that first year, like just went on. Nobody, I was by myself. I wasn't at home. Nobody to sneak. I could do whatever the hell I wanted. And this whole secret had been revealed to me for whatever reason. It was triggered. I was in, you know, by myself now, outside of the family, outside of the home. And I was like, what am I going to do with this information, you know? And so one of the miracles, and I was going to talk about this as I was getting into recovery, but that I saw now that I didn't see then was that 3 months into it, a sequence of events occurred. I'm in New York City. Anything could happen in New York City, right? And I find myself in a therapist's office. Now, I come from a strict Italian Sicilian family, and there's many beliefs about Sicilian culture, but one of them is, well, in my family, I don't want to generalize, but it's like, you know, you keep your secrets to yourself, okay? That's one of the many things, like, don't tell people your problems, you know, just act, we call it due facce, you know, like, show your face to the world as if everything's okay, and deal with your hell in the back. And so, you know, that was part of my blueprint. And then here I am in this doctor's office, and all I could say to her, I remember my very first session, and I said, something horrible has happened to me. You have to fix me, is what I said to her. And so that started a whole, like, process of therapy that essentially saved my life. Like, you know, and this is the part that, trust me when I tell you that, I believe with every inch of my body, I don't always live it, but that God has done for me what I could have never, ever, ever done for myself. And that is one of those instances where I found myself in this therapist's office and I'm getting help, you know? And it was just a miracle, you know? And I didn't see that until I got abstinent, you see? But so anyway, so that was college. And then I came in, as I described, in 2010. Did I say that? Six. Thank you. I forget. 2006, January 2006. That same month, something traumatic happened once again, where my grandfather, who had abused me, died. He died that month, and this re-triggered a whole bunch of things. And how do I deal with things? I have a problem. My solution is to eat. That's the only solution I had with anything that happened. And so I started up again. Like it got. See, my eating patterns. I always yo-yoed. I mean, but these were like, the college year went up 40 pounds. Like that was a huge like lift. And then I would diet my way down because, you know, I was going to find me a husband, come down 40. It was just this constant. And this was another one of those ones where I just like propelled upwards. And then I don't know how I came into Red Bank. That was my first meeting and my home meeting today. And I blink and I'm in an OA meeting. Like, I still can't even remember how the hell I got there, but I went. And so I didn't get abstinent automatically and immediately. And I believe the reason for that was I remember coming in as a newcomer, so scared. And, you know, I sit here and I talk in front of you guys, but this was not, you know, I couldn't even express myself. Like, you know, I used to watch people and they would share. I'd be like, she really knows who she is. Look at how she's sharing about her feelings. Like, I was so disconnected to my feelings. Like, the barrier was the food. Like, I had no idea what was going on, all on purpose, you know? And here they are. I'd get a share and I'd start bawling. And I got too embarrassed and I would stop sharing. I mean, this went on. And then the whole God thing, I just couldn't do it. Because, you know, I believe in God. I don't trust God. I don't trust anybody. And maybe that's for you guys, but I'll just sit here. And I kept coming. Another miracle. Like, I can't explain that to you guys when I tell you that every Saturday, I'd show up at that damn chair and I'd try to share, start crying. And then I would come the next Saturday. And then something miraculous happened. Once again, miraculous. I cannot describe to you why or how, but after 2.5 years of doing the same thing, thinking I could do this on my own, and by the way, my best thinking, let me tell you what my best thinking did. My best thinking got me about 11 months of managing the same weight through this one of these diets called Barry Sears, The Zone Diet. It's one of those books, you know, that I had all of them. But that diet, I was able to maintain the same weight for, I got 11 months, and then I started eating again. It was, but that was my best thinking, you know. My best thinking didn't even get me into Red Bank, because I still don't know how the hell I got into Red Bank. Another testament to God's grace, I'm telling you. So I'm sitting in these meetings 2.5 years, and then, and I talk about this a lot, but that last binge was like the binge of all binges, and it happened, the disease is progressive, right? So it had progressed, and my behaviors were getting more, I binged in public, and that was like the end all be all, like the disgusting, like I would never do that, and I did it. Well, I did it, and I ate it at a party, it was a bachelorette party, my sister's, excuse me, and I practically ate the whole round thing with that frosting around. I mean, just, it was almost gone. And there's a whole sequence as to how I got there. There were situations that were leading up towards it. But that was my last binge, which was April 19th, 2008. And then I woke up the next morning, and I was done. I don't know how else to describe it. I was willing to do whatever the program wanted me to do. I was willing to follow directions, because this is what this is about, right? Following directions. And I was exactly where I was supposed to be at that point. And it's a miracle. And ever since then, I've been willing, because I want to stay abstinent. The life that I have now, I could have never, ever preyed upon myself. My best thinking, I told you. It's just what it did for me. So that started a whole other level of, frankly, existence. I got a sponsor, and luckily this woman guided me in the right way. And you know what she did? Just wasted no time at all. Got me right into inventories. And I was not, I was at a place, I was so just done. I keep saying that, but honestly, I even remember it. Like, what do you want me to do? You want me to write this? I'll do it. You want me to read? Where do you want me to meet you? What do you want me to do? You want me to surrender my food? Anything you want me to do. And she was well-versed. She was a cross addict. She was cross-addicted. She was an alcoholic. Very big book-centric woman. Took me through the first 164 pages. Is that 164? 167? And just 1, 2, 3, you're there. She's like, I could see it. You're there. Let's start this inventory. And now I had to feel all these feelings, right, and deal with all of this pain and see the fact that, you know, I'm pissed at the world because things aren't going my way. And I want you to do what I want you to do, and things don't go that way. So, and by the way, you have a part in all of this, you know, and I'm responsible, you know, and I didn't find that hard to deal with, because I blame myself for everything anyway, you know. I mean, I was the reason I was fat. I was the reason for everything, you know, everything. I blamed myself, and it was a form of control almost, because I couldn't necessarily blame anybody else, because then I couldn't have any control over it. But this, I can control myself, and it was my fault always. So this woman took me right through the inventories. I will say this to you: one of the first people on my inventory was my grandfather, but I wrote this to her. You know, I wrote it. She told me to do it. I did it, and I said, I have no part in this. This fourth column here that you want me to fill out, like, I did nothing wrong. Like, I looked at her like almost hesitant, like, I know you want me to do this, but I don't know what to write on this. And we all know when we do this for the first time, if you all recall doing that first inventory, like, I can write the name, I could write the blame, and I could tell you how it made me feel in all aspects of my ego, because typically my pride is hurt, you know. I'm not getting what I want from the situation, and I can't face reality. Like, I can't see things for what they truly are. But that last column, sometimes I need help, you know, because I can't see the truth. And so she said, leave it alone. Leave it alone. We'll get back to that. This is God-willed. This is not something forced. And and we'll move on. So that was left, and I didn't go back to that piece for at least 3 or 4 years, by the way. I didn't come full circle until then, but it was enough. The inventories that I had done was enough to keep me abstinent. Okay, it gave me enough freedom, because that's what this inventory stuff does, right? That's what 4 through 12, all of them, it gave me the freedom, and I had enough on there. But I always knew that I had to be thorough and honest, and I had to go back. But I just wasn't ready. So I did the work that she told me to, and that was just, it was miraculous, you know, because what I started to see and the shifts that were starting to happen was, there were a lot of shifts, but primarily the fact that, as I said before, there were so many miraculous things that had happened in my life when I started to look back on my past, right? Because that's essentially what we have to do is, I mean, they had me looking at like 10-year increments. I mean, thorough and honest, they kept saying. And I just always felt such a victim. Like, it was always, like, people doing bad things to me. I, of course, you know, the shame that I felt was beyond anything I could describe. And that I had done this to myself. But then what happened was I started to shift. You know, I got abstinent. I remember just starting to see things in my life that I could have never done. There was no part of my will could have made these things happen. Like, for example, even getting out of my mother's house and into college. My father, hardcore Sicilian man, women don't get educated. They stay home, they get married, they have children, they cook and clean. Now, I was trained to be cooked and clean, and I could clean a bathroom like you wouldn't believe, and I could cook very well, but I wanted to go to school. And my mother convinced him to let me go. And if that had not happened, I don't know if I would have ever gotten into that therapy. I don't know if I would have been where I am today if she had not stood up for me. And I'm always so thankful for that, you know, because it's not something, some people find that easy. It's like, oh, I'm going to go to college, you know, not in my family, you know. And I was such an independent type of person as it was, you know, and I don't want no man taking care of me, you know. I mean, that was just like, but that was the way I was brought up, you know. So that was like one of the first miracles that happened. How about finding that therapist 3 months into the whole thing? I just can't believe it. And the willingness to sit there and I seeked recovery. I seek and you shall find. I was there and I would go and I'd say to her, fix me. Something's wrong with me. I need help. And I said to her too, at a very young age, I said, I want to have a family. Now, most people think I'm going to get married, have kids, you know, but not for a person like me. You know, I never thought that was ever conceivable based on my history and what I went through as a child. First of all, I didn't trust men, and I thought all men abuse. So I had to relearn a lot of things that I couldn't have done on my own. So I would say to her, can you just make me better? I want to have a family. I'm 20 years old saying I want to have a family. And now I have Ted and Maya and Mateo. Like, I have that family that I always wanted, you know. God has done for me what I could never, ever, ever have done for myself, you know. And I find wonder in that to this day because I know what... For so long, I thought I'm never going to have that. I'm never going to be able to have anything like that. I won't be able to maintain anything like that. Like, I don't know how to have a relationship with a person yet, a man, which is a man, you know. And here I am, you know. After I need a lot of therapy, but I've been married in June. I'll be married 15 years, and I got 2 kids. Like, it's miraculous, guys. I mean, so the food. I need to always take it back to the food. The food wasn't necessarily addressed in the beginning years. I had a problem. I had to deal with other things, you know. But this program was just the icing on the cake for me, as far as, and no pun intended, of course, but it was just the whole thing that brought it together in terms of me living the life that God intended, you know. Because I believe that that's what we are here to do, is to live the life that God intends for us, you know. And that means trusting and relying upon God. And that's hard work, because I don't easily do that. I mean, I default to self-sufficiency. You know, I want to do for myself. I'm very independent and resourceful, you know, and I don't need anybody's help. But this program, these 12 steps tell me no, you need to put one hand in God's hand and the other one in somebody else's. You don't keep any secrets and you don't lie. And those are all things I used to do, like constantly, you know. And so, I mean, I'm talking like total reversal, you know, but that's what's required in order to have any level of recovery and freedom, is we look at, and we're required every day in order to maintain this reprieve that we have, because that's all it is, you know? I don't mean to say that's all it is, but my default is to eat, you know? My go-to is to eat, but I know I know the misery that causes me. And I don't want to use that solution anymore. So I have got problems. I still got problems. But now now I'm presented with a spiritual solution. And they're saying, in order for you to have any level of recovery, you know, there's another door that you could choose. There's two of them in front of you. You know, there's the one that you've always known, you know, and we all know where that took you. And then there's God. And I don't know exactly what that one is, so I've got to really, really have a lot of faith. But that's probably better than this, you know? I mean, because we all have decisions in terms of our recovery. Every day, we must make about 10 decisions a day for recovery. Well, we must make 3 meals and a snack. I mean, those are my 4 first ones, you know? Am I gonna do this or not? And then there are many others that unfold depending on the day. And so I just wanted to, I know, I mean, I need to give a shout out to like the spiritual aspect of this program, which I think is just the piece for me, that constant connection to a God of my understanding and that reliance upon God. See, I'm on a different plane, this plane of trusting and relying upon God. That's what the book tells me. And I need to practice that trust all the time, even though I came from a place where I didn't trust anybody and I didn't need anybody. But that's not the way that I'm going to live my fullest life. And some days are hard, you know. But I have a place to go. And I believe that if I keep myself humble, and that's hard sometimes because my ego likes to tell me that, you know, I'm better than everybody else. My ego likes to tell me that I don't need to do it that way. There's a whole lot of things my thinking tells me. It's my worst enemy. Trust me, my mind gives me more problems than solutions. It's never gotten me out of anything. You know, it's just constantly, it's quite pathetic when you think about it. It constantly repeats the same thing. It might look at a different angle depending on what part of my ego is inflated. You know, it's like, and some days it's nonstop chatter. And some days I call my sponsor. I'm like, I can't stop thinking. And she says to me, call another compulsive eater. She has a whole thing that she tells me. And sometimes it's like the first time I've ever heard it before, as if I'm learning. I learn these things over and over again. You know, I think I know what I'm doing. And then I'm like, damn it, I should have just called somebody, you know. And it's not easy for me to reach out and ask for help. That's something that I have to really, I have to be reminded of. And that's why I have a sponsor. And I need to surrender my food, because depending on the day, 4 ounces of freaking chicken doesn't look the same. You know, I mean, it's just, I have a disease and I have this, you know, distorted perception of what food is, you know. And so it's a wee program, and I have to do this despite everything that my blueprint tells me that, you know, that's there. It's not true. You know, this way of living is, it is right for me. And I know that it is. And I think that's all I've got. How many more minutes do I have?
As much as you like.
Oh God, that's such pressure. We end at 8? Oh, okay. So I think I'm pretty much there. I think I've said what I needed to say. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
So what do we do now? Open share?